Monday, December the 4th, the wedding week begins. And I, with that good feeling of being rested and wanting to get things done, I worked at my desk in the morning. The first big event was a bill signing in the East Room, the mental retardation amendments. I walked in with Lyndon at 11:30, and there was a whole front row of drama. The members of his committee, behind each a story, Muriel Humphrey, Eunice Shriver, Bess Harris Jones, along with the doctors and the scientists. This time, we missed the boat. It did not go well. Lyndon began with some ill-chosen jokes. Something about the East Room being the poor man's wedding chapel, and a reference to having the wedding here because of a recent experience in church. It grated on me. There are days when he fights, literally runs, from one appointment to another. This time, I believe, he took a staff member's judgment and used jokes about a ceremony that is not a joking matter. Actually, it's a good step forward, and we are still making them. Although there's a general impression of gloom and stalemate. When it was over, the congressman went up and stood behind them, led by Lister Hill, father of all good things in medicine. And he passed out pens, and we filed into the East Room and shook hands and hugged as Matilda Krim and Bess Jones came down the line. And then I went to the swimming pool for 30 laps. It's odd how I could have swum here for 4 years without ever until the other day seeing the initials JFK and then a date, March I believe it was, 62, painted into the mural of the Virgin Isles on the door. This is the third such reminder in the house. There is that plaque above the fireplace in my bedroom, and then the inscription in the side of the marble mantel in the president's room. I went up the solarium for lunch. The first day of our protracted house party, I had written out a long list of cold meats, salads, hot casseroles, and sent a copy to each of the numerous cooks, asking them to put together menus for lunch, which would be served buffet from 12:30 to 2:30 in the solarium, and dinner from 7:30 to 9:30 buffet also. Listed the approximate number of guests and the nights when they would be eating out, and thanked the staff for what I knew was really a great drain on them and a challenge to their ingenuity. Also, I asked them to fill the icebox with milk and Coke and Frescas and some beer, and to set up a box, keep cookies and Fritos and a centerpiece of fruit so that all the house guests can have snacks whenever they want. It's going to be one long house party, and I plan to enjoy it more than anybody. A sizable crisis is that Zephyr has had to leave to attend the funeral of her nephew in California. She'll be gone 3 days. She's hard to get along without any time, and especially this week. In the afternoon, I went to Mr. Pears and then on to Dr. Turchin's, feeling much relieved thereafter, while the big job went on in my bedroom of putting up the new drapes and the canopy on the bed. And then, back at the White House, I got ready for the Harriman's party to introduce Linda and Chuck to the diplomatic corps. I wore my pink lace, sprinkled with silver, by Molly Parnas, far too short, I thought, an elegant white mink coat, and was, I thought, waiting for the president on the second floor, and I got the frantic news to come quick. He was in the car waiting for me. I joined him at a run, but not fast enough. It's being a bad day for him, and I could feel his tenseness. There's too much, too fast. From this party, on a dead run, he will go to an important appointment with William Randolph Hearst, and then to a news conference at the State Department. But he is attacking his battalion of troubles with vigor and determination. This afternoon, he was in the swimming pool with the Chief Justice and Abe. Every day now, for more than a week, he's taken exercise on that exercise thing in his bedroom. He's done without desserts and bread and drinks, all except Saturday night, and he has lost 8 or 10 pounds. I am proud. The doorman who let us out at the Harrimans was a genial colored man whom I have seen at every party I can remember since our earliest days in the Senate, when I began going to important parties. Avril and Marie were at the front door waiting for us. We stopped for pictures. The Harrimans had had Linda Bird and Rob in a receiving line in the back drawing room, surrounded by their fabulous art collection. Cezanne, Van Gogh, Toulouse-Lautrec. Linda was lovely with her hair piled high, wearing a pale ice blue heavy silk dress, the deep bib of jewels, and earrings out of the same jewels. On a table was the lovely present from the diplomatic corps, a 5-piece silver tea service, including the tray in Linda's pattern, Chantilly. The newspapers the next day said the price of it, according to a local store, is $6,770. Linda made a swift tour of the room with Jimmy Symington, greeting as many as he could and leaving in about 20 minutes, while I stayed for an hour, making a leisurely circuit with Sylvia. The dean, Savisa Casa, whispered conspiratorially to me that their personal gift would be over for Linda and Chuck a little later. Everyone was telling Mrs. Nehru goodbye. In fact, the town is going to have ulcers if they don't leave soon. There have been so many farewell parties. I saw Dobrynin in a corner, but did not speak to him. The people I felt I really knew were all the Latin American ambassadors who had come down for El Weekend at the ranch in April. And I had a moment to say to Margine that I was very concerned and hopeful about the Mexican exhibit at Hemisphere. It could be the greatest thing they'd have there. It ought to be. There were screams and hugs when I saw Robin Duke, and we had a few moments to talk, and I introduced her to Mrs. Robb, who by that time had sought a table out under the tent. There was a large tent that covered the top terrace of their garden, decorated with long red velvet streamers and big silk roses, the same red as Linda's bridesmaids will wear. And a small version of Peter Duchin's orchestra was making music. But principally, it was a talking party. Through the plastic walls, I could see the glistening green of the great magnolia trees in the descending levels of the garden where last summer, August 66, they'd had the wonderful party for Lucy. I completed the circuit, saying hello to Sir Patrick and Lady Dean, and to an extravagantly interesting man, an Arab, I suppose, in a creamy white tunic embroidered from head to toe. Almost entirely they wear dark western suits now. Only the African women wear boo-boos, and occasionally a Ghanaian in a brilliantly striped blanket. There were only a few non-diplomats, the Vice President and Muriel, the Chief Justice and Mrs. Warren, Jack and Mary Margaret, who have predictably become very much a part of the Georgetown set. Lucy was having the most fun of anybody. Candid, quotable, liked by the press. She was scotching rumors that she was expecting again. Surveying the crowd, saying, "This looks like old home week." Greeting her daddy, "Hello, handsome." And then leaving quickly like Cinderella, "I have to be back at the White House by 7 o'clock, because my babysitter leaves then." The wedding party, and how generous it was of Marie and Averill to have them, because even that gracious home does not hold this size crowd easily. We're having a good time and staying a long time, watching the flow of celebrities. Older, more sophisticated than Lucy's wedding party. The girls really quite stunning, but clinging together a bit because they were different from the diplomatic crowd. I stayed a full hour and left about 6:30. At home, I autographed and recorded. Lyndon came in at 9:30 with Marie from addressing the National Foreign Policy Conference for Business Executives at the State Department. He's in a fighting mood. I admire him fiercely. I want to see him spend himself, almost whatever it takes, against this miasma of despond, this virus that is infecting our country. And yet it would be so easy, so happy, to, as I have heard him say, let the bastards save the bastards. Announce he would not be a candidate. Draw a circle for our energies, our brains, our hours, around our family, our business, our very personal friends, and have fun for what is left to us of life. I had dinner with Lyndon and Marie. Chief Mills came in, and I had exercises and a rub, and watched TV, and to bed at 11.